All right. Good morning again. Put this on. All right. So to get us started, new sermon series, new thought process, we're going to start with this. And so you can, if you can read it, go ahead and read it, and then I'll read it after a few seconds and make sure everybody read it appropriately. Hopefully you've seen some of these before, because if you haven't seen these before, you're missing out. And if you, so you need to go Google these after we're done if you haven't seen these before. All right. First one. They'll move. There it is. Don't let worries kill you. Let the church help. These are church signs. These are fun. All right, next one. That's a harder to read. Having trouble sleeping. We have sermons. Come hear one. That seems appropriate for me, I guess, in some way. I like this one. Lord, help us be the people our dogs think we are. Notice it doesn't say cats, because our cats don't care a bit about us. So, but dogs are, yeah. That would be a good life goal. All right. We're going to assume he's preaching about hell. You go ahead. Do you know what hell is? Come hear our preacher. I think that one's true. Forgive your enemies because it messes with their heads. I think that's true. Maybe not the best reason to forgive, but well, this is a more recent one. Social distancing does not apply to God. Draw near to Him, and I think the next one does as well. Yeah, this is a little dated now, but can we uninstall 2020 and install it again? This version has a virus. I think 2021 is not going to be a whole lot better that way. Last one, I think. Now is a good time to visit our pastors on vacation. That one is more for my, I get to go and preach at Summum here in a little bit, and so that one's a little bit more for Summum, because Darren's gone and I get to preach out there, so. Anyway, if you haven't seen those aren't even the best ones. If you go and Google this, there's actually a Facebook page that I just devoted to these. And some of them are really good. Some of them aren't very appropriate, so I picked and choose for you too a little bit. As you can tell, this morning we're changing gears just a little bit, being a little bit more topical, looking at this theme of signs, rather than doing something more like I usually do, a lot more exegetical, where we just look at a passage or a book in the Bible or something and go through it. So we're going to look at kind of a more of a theme. This morning we're going to kind of encompass the overall idea of it and then move into specific signs over the next few weeks over the summer that I'll be here. This morning's a little bit different. Actually, I should probably preface it with this. I did change gears. I did have a different sermon series planned, but as I was preparing it earlier this week, it got me thinking. I was like, I want to change. I guess I felt led to do something a little different. In fact, it actually came together really quickly as I was going through some of my notes and things I wanted to cover. It came together really quickly and really well. And so this morning is going to be signs, overarching signs for our life. And then the rest of the sermon series is going to look at specific types of signs for us to be reminded of ways to live out our spirituality. And so it's really looking at our relationship with God and the way that we live out our dynamic with Him in our day-to-day life. And so this morning what we're looking at is this idea of signs in terms of symptoms. And when we think of signs in our life, we see different things, and we know we have to do something because of what the sign tells us. And so if I've got a runny nose and a cough and I have trouble breathing, you know, those are symptoms of something else going on. And so I can deal with the symptoms, right? I can take medicine or I can rest more or do different things like that. But it's not taking care of the root cause of what's going on. And also, if I don't take care of it, I could have long-term consequences. And that's kind of the nature of what we're looking at this morning are signs. We're going to look at just seven. I borrowed this list from somebody else and adapted it from 10 to 7. So you're welcome, first of all. So it's a little, just more for time's sake than anything. But the seven signs and symptoms of where we at with God, our spiritual walk. And I don't like to look at the negative a lot of times. And so don't get caught up in the negative of these. I mean, it's a symptom. It's a sign. Obviously, those are negative. But focus on why, if we see ourselves in these signs, how are we going to move forward rather than just sitting where we are and dealing and, you know, saying, well, that's just me or that's just how I am or anything like that. And so to start with that idea, a noun or a sign is an object, quality, or event whose presence or occurrence indicates the probable presence or occurrence of something else. So the sign is a revelation of something else going on. And so, like I said, we're looking at these more as chronic kind of things. If we see this in our life regularly, continually, because we're all going to struggle with all of these at some point in time. Okay, that's just the nature of being human. But if we see ourselves in a pattern of living these out, of following ourselves in these regularly, then we need to, I think, take a step back and say, okay, why is that symptom there? Why is that sign there? And to evaluate where we're at and how we can move forward well. And so this is an object quality or event whose presence or occurrence indicates a probable presence or occurrence of something else. What else is going on that we need to evaluate? But always in mind, how can we move forward? How can we continue forward? So with that in mind, if you've got your Bibles or a Bible app, we're going to be jumping around quite a bit, but highlighting some of these symptoms and these signs that we see. I also want to point out that, again, all of these things are very biblical and biblically based signs, but sometimes it's hard to see them in terms of what the Bible tells us, and we see them a little bit more holistically when we evaluate them later. And I want to throw that out there, I guess, to say that it takes experience for people to see these signs that have become bigger problems. Obviously, we're told that these are issues biblically, but to see them requires some kind of experience or that kind of thing to look back into them. And so I just kind of want to throw that out there and keep that in mind too as well. All right, all that ado, we're going to jump into the first sign. First sign or symptom is an ignoring the emotions of anger, sadness, and fear. We know King Solomon, one of the wisest men to live, he wrote some of our Bible in Ecclesiastes 1, 3, verse 1 and 4. He writes, "For everything there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven, a time to weep, a time to laugh, a time to mourn, and a time to dance." Obviously, if you have heard this rest, there's a whole bunch of other times that he mentions. But here especially, Solomon's pointing out there's this time for all of these different things, all of these different emotions. And in fact, if we jump to Ephesians chapter 4, verse 26, Paul even tells us to be angry, but do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger. And so again, this first symptom is focusing on these negative emotions, and not just anger, sadness, and fear, but all of those are kind of related, right? A lot of times, and I get here too, if we anger comes out because of our sadness, because of our fear, oftentimes. And the purpose isn't, to say I don't have those feelings or to ignore those feelings. The purpose is to deal with them in a healthy way, right? Obviously, Paul says you're going to be angry, right? Solomon says there's going to be a time where you're weeping and you're grieving and you're sad and those kind of things. But how do we move forward with those well? How do we handle those instead of just ignoring them? I know as a guy, especially a Midwestern guy, born and raised in Southwest Minnesota, anger was about the only negative emotion we were allowed to express, it seemed like, right? And that just seemed to be the nature of our culture. To be sad wasn't appropriate, quit crying, dry your tears, and all that kind of stuff we got told. And fear was one thing we didn't express very, very often. But they're part of who we are. In fact, a commentator I read this week said, we need to come to terms with the reality of life, right? Anger, fear, sadness, they are part of life. They are things that we will feel, no matter what you do about it, right? You can't cut out your emotions from your life. And so how are we going to handle them and deal with them in a biblically biblically and loving way? And Paul says specifically with anger, right? If we're going to have our anger, he says, be angry, but don't sin. Don't let the sun go down on your anger. And I think what he's not saying, make sure you take care of it before the sun goes down. Like literally, that sun sets, you're going to be in big trouble, right? If you're still angry. No, he's saying, deal with it quickly. Handle it in an appropriate way, in a quick manner, so that things get worked out. And so, because we all know, right? And maybe I'm the only one that has let anger fester for more than a day or so, right? It's like it just like a fire, right? It just continues to burn and fester and grow and just expand, and eventually that fire explodes, usually out of your mouth in some negative way. And that's the nature of anger. It just builds and builds and builds if we don't deal with it. And so to ignore that, to suppress it, to push those emotions down is not a spiritually healthy way of dealing with it. And so that's the first sign that we're going to look at this morning. The second one is dying to the wrong things. Dying to the wrong things. And if you didn't grow up in the church, this might be a new idea for you. But Matthew or Luke records Jesus' words, Luke 9:23. It says, "If any man would come after me," Jesus says, "let him deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me." And so there's some speculation onto what exactly those things all mean. But to deny yourself means to give up control of your life. To say, I'm going to do what God asked me to do instead of just what I want to do. Taking up a cross means to bear the burden of the hardship and maybe the persecution and even ultimately the death for our relationship with him. And to follow him means to do what he did, but also to be a part of the group and the company that he keeps. And so being a part of the church, being a part of those that believe the same things that we believe in. But unfortunately, what happens, and I don't see this as often in the Midwest necessarily, but what happens is sometimes we say we're denying ourselves certain things in our world, certain enjoyments, certain pleasures, certain goals and hopes that we have in order to say, well, Jesus wants me to do this or that. And we fit into it. I think I see it more with women in the Midwest probably, and I'm not picking on you by any means, but it just seems to be the way it goes. Is that we see that this is the model or this is the role or this is the place that they're supposed to be, right? We put them in a box and say, this is your role, this is what you should be doing, this is what path you should take. And so we put them in those boxes, and so we try to put ourselves in those boxes, but not all of us have the same goals and passions and desires and, you know, those kind of things, right? Not, you know, as wonderful it is to have, you know, loving, caring mothers in our world, right? And we need them. Not everyone has that passion and desire and, you know, drive to be a mother or a father or to be in this role or that role. And so when someone or the church or someone tells you that this is the path to take, we sometimes think, well, that's what Jesus wants me to do. Well, maybe, but maybe not. Maybe God, Jesus put a passion in you to do something else that's wonderful and godly and life-giving that doesn't fit the mold of everyone else around you. And that's to say, maybe we're dying to something that's not worth dying for, and we should pursue the things that God has gifted us with. Obviously, we need to die to the things that are bad and wrong and sinful in our world, obviously. But maybe there's another path that we can take. And so keeping in mind the passions and the things that God has given us and the good things that he has blessed us with as well. All right, third sign. There we go. Third sign is dividing life into secular and sacred. Jesus said in Matthew 22:37, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind." And obviously, if we know our prayers and the things like that, we probably know heart, soul, mind, and strength. The nature of our lives is to be holistic, is to be people that love God and are part of His and have a relationship with Him wherever we go. And I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one that it's kind of weird for to see someone in the context that you're not used to them. I get this a lot with kids, especially, right? They're used to me being at VBS or being at family night or those kind of things. If I see them at the school, they're like, "What are you doing here? You do not belong here," kind of a thing, right? They have a context for where people and things should be. And we do that in our adult life. We separate out our different worlds. We have our work friends and our family group. We have our, you know, church family, and we have all these different things. And sometimes we try really hard to keep them apart, right? We don't want this group to mingle with this group and all these different kinds of things. And so it's so easy to separate our lives and compartmentalize our lives. But again, God wants to be our God of the whole thing, of our whole life. In fact, I found this when I was a youth pastor here. I almost felt a sense of a burden lifted off of me when I left town, right? So I would go to like Peoria or Springfield on a weekend or something like that and just feel like I'm free, kind of, which seems really odd. I just didn't feel like I had to wear the pastoral hat and didn't have to do, you know, have this certain mentality or perspective or those kind of things. And it was even worse when I went back home, because when you go back home and I'm the youngest of three, I've got two older brothers and I'm the baby, it's easy just to go home and say, well, my mom likes cooking for me, so I'm just going to let her cook all my meals, right? And she likes doing my laundry, so I'll let her do all my laundry. It's easy to fall back into that role, but we compartmentalize and separate out all these different worlds. Now, now I don't feel that way. As a pastor here, and I feel like that's who I am, regardless of whether I'm here at the church, whether I'm at the cafe, whether I'm at home, you know, back in Minnesota, or I'm wherever, in Peoria, Springfield, at the ball games, we were at boys ball game yesterday morning. No matter where I am, I'm the same person, and you know, not just morally or you know whatever like that way, but I'm a pastor no matter where I am and what I'm doing. And so it's so easy though to separate ourselves out, and I feel so much better to not feel like I'm burdened with where I'm at, right? I feel like I'm relaxed now everywhere I am, not just when I go back home as well. And so the mentality is, again, it's keeping our whole lives focused on our relationship with God. It's not just when we're here or there or wherever that we have that relationship and act or look a certain way, but it's everywhere. And we're the same person and the same, we have the same mentality and attitude no matter where we are. The fourth symptom or sign is doing for God instead of being for God. And this is an interesting one because I think this is a very Midwest thing as well. But Paul writes in Galatians 2, 19 through 21, he says, "For I, through the law, died to the law, that I might live to God. Because I have been crucified with Christ, it is no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. And the life I live, I now live in the flesh. I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. I do not nullify the grace of God, for if justification were through the law, then Christ died for no purpose." Excuse me. All right. This one, again, I think it's something for all of us to think about because it's so much easier to do than it is to be, right? How many of you have a checklist at home of things that you need to get accomplished in the next week or 2 weeks or before you die, right? We've got that checklist, right? Almost all of us have a checklist. It's so much easier to do the checklist and the do and the take care of and accomplish than it is to just be, especially when it comes to our relationship with God, right? We can keep busy with all these different things and attending meetings, attending church, being a part of this and that and helping out with this and that and taking care of all these kinds of things. And the doing is so much easier. I love myself a checklist. That's a terrible way of saying that, but I love checking off things off my list too. In fact, technology has made that so much worse because I could check things off on my phone now too. But what God calls us to be, and this what this verse is really saying, he's saying we're not justified by what we do any longer. That was what the law was about. We're not saved. We're not brought into a relationship with God because of what we do. We're brought in because of grace. And because we're brought in by grace, God just wants us to be. He just wants us to be his son, his daughter, wants to just be there for us and with us. And so instead of all these things that we checklist to do, God often just wants us to just be. And again, this can be, it's so tricky because, you know, we think about being, well, read your Bible and praying and meditation. Well, it's so easy to get those on our be or our do list as well too, right? You get up in the morning, all right, 15 minutes, check off. I spent my time in the Bible and reading my, right? We do that too. But sometimes it's just, I say sometimes regularly and continually, we just need to be. And that meditation and that slowing down, and it's hard because we're such a task-based society and task-based people, that to just be with God is hard, but it's so important, right? And I think all of us probably know times in our world where, or people, or relationships where it's just easier to just be with them, whereas other people it's more work where we feel like we have to do with them, right? It's work to be with them. But sometimes it's about conversation. It's about just spending time. It's not about getting anything done, but it's just about, just that relational time of it. The next sign is spiritualizing away conflict. And again, this is something that I've talked about numerous times before and something that we need to continue to work on. I know I need to work on. But we all know, again, conflict is everywhere, right? In our homes, in our churches, in our families, in our work, wherever. It's even in our own hearts often. But too often what happens, and especially as terms of a sign or a symptom in our world, is we tend to, again, ignore it. We tend to spiritualize it by saying, okay, well, if I don't say anything, then that's better for the overall good, right? Saying something makes it worse sometimes, we try to think. So we try to spiritualize and say, well, it's better in the long run if I don't do this or don't do that or don't figure this out. But really, it's not about keeping the peace or avoiding bigger conflicts. It's about finding ways to make peace. In fact, Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount, the Beatitudes, says, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God." He doesn't say peacekeepers. He doesn't say peace maintainers or peace fakers. Is that a, we'll just go with that. But he says makers, people that are making peace, purposely finding ways to make it so that it doesn't just look like the surface of the water is smooth and everything's good, and there's tons of turmoil and chaos, you know, turning underneath. It's about finding ways to make the turmoil underneath go away as well in order for it actually to be peaceful and not just look peaceful. And again, this word peace that Paul or Jesus uses here is the shalom, this holistic peace, this really calm sense of peace. But also Jesus says, in terms of that idea of peace, in Matthew 18:15, and again, I've talked about this several times before, but he says, if your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he listens to you, you have gained a brother. And I just want to highlight the last few words there, is that the purpose of the maintaining, and or not maintaining, the purpose of peacemaking is to gain brothers, is to gain sisters, is to gain relationship. And again, all that's really the whole purpose. It's not to make, you know, yourself feel better or to make God happy or anything like that. It's to gain those around you and gain brothers and or sisters, especially especially when it comes to conflict. And so spiritualizing conflict, trying to say, you know, God doesn't want me to say anything or all those kinds of things is just not the way Jesus talks. He wants us to find ways to make peace better. The next sign, the sixth sign, is living without limits. Again, these are all symptoms of ways and things that get in the way of our relationship with God. And this idea of living without limits, we a lot of times think of burnout, right? And we say, okay, we push too hard and we just can't do anymore, so we need to take a break, or we need to stop, or we need to step back, or whatever. And so this idea of living without limits does relate to burnout, but I think it's more than that as well. It's living with clear limits, not just by saying being able to say no to things, but living with limits within our relationships to a certain extent as well. In fact, Jesus very clearly withdrew as well. Luke 5:15-16. It says, but so much the more the report went abroad concerning Jesus, and great multitudes gathered to hear and to be healed of their infirmities. But Jesus withdrew to the wilderness and prayed. What I've decided is that if Jesus, who had the greatest ministry in the world, who had all of these wonderful things that he did, was the only person in the world ever in history to be able to do the things that he did, right, with the healings and being able to teach and all these kinds of things, if he takes time to go alone and be with God and pray to rest, then we need to too. None of us are better than Jesus, are stronger than Jesus, are more able than Jesus. None of us have greater work to do than Jesus, right? Even the greatest, most powerful CEO in the country, whoever that is, if that's Bezos or whoever that is now, he is not greater than Jesus, and he does not have more things to do than Jesus did, okay? And so it's okay to say no. It's okay to slow down. It's okay, not even okay, it's necessary and right to have those limits and to be able to slow down and step back into things. And to spend that time to be, right? Again, this goes back to that being versus doing, just being with God. Instead of doing and doing and doing, just being with God in that meditation and that prayer and learning more about him. And so taking all of those things into account, those limits are important in our life. And I have a hard time with this as well. I feel, and I got asked this the other day too, it just seems like there's always something more to do, right? And something more to add or to add, you know, to incorporate. And so I know I need to work on that as well. But the main thing I found is that I may not get burnt out with all, or we may not get burnt out with all the things that we do, but are the things that we're committed to suffering because we're so stretched out? That's probably more where I'm at, right? I'm committed to this and I'm committed to this, you know, got the kids and got this and going on all these kinds of things. Are all of those getting a small percentage of my effort and commitment and time, or am I needing to focus and say, okay, I want to be able to give as much as I can to this and as much as I can to this and as much as I can to this? And so that's probably more where it comes in for me than it does the burnout. But I think living without limits is a huge reason to slow down or to consider as a sign for our relationship with God. The final one we'll look at this morning is judging other people's spiritual journey. In Matthew 7:1-5, Jesus says this. He says, judge not that you be not judged. For with the judgment you pronounce, you will be judged, and the measure you give will be the measure you get. Why do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me take that speck out of your eye when there is a log in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. All right, so we could spend all day talking about this as well. But I think we've done sermons on this not too long ago, but there's a balance here, right? He uses that term measure. And if you consider how they bought things back in Jesus' day, how they would weigh out, you know, the silver or whatever, the money, with whatever they were buying, that's how they paid for things. Well, if the balance isn't fair, if the balance isn't balanced, then someone's getting cheated. And so what often happens, and I think what Jesus is saying here, is he's saying we often look at our lives and we give ourselves, our scale is a little bit lighter than the scale of anybody else, right? We tend not to judge our things as harshly as we might judge somebody else and what they're dealing with. Because I know my story, right? I know why I do these things, right? I have all these good reasons and excuses for the way I act, right? But that person, that's ridiculous. Why would they do that? Sorry, I shouldn't point at you guys over there. Why would they do that, right? They have no good reason to do that, right? I have all my reasons and all my excuses. But we don't measure the same way that we should. But they have a story, and they have reasons for what they're doing, and they have their excuses and things as well. And so to me, and I don't want to hierarchy these things too much, but for me, this is a huge, huge thing to consider and look at when we think of our relationship with God, especially, is when we look at other people and we say, well, my scale is going to be a lot lighter for me, and it's going to be a lot heavier for someone else around me. And again, that standard and that scale is such a big part of that as well. Are we looking at other people's spiritual walk? Are we looking at other people's journey with God and we saying, well, why can't they get it together? Or why can't they do this right? Or what's going on here? But we look at our own life and we say, well, we've got our own 2x4 sticking out of our eye. And so it's so important for me. And again, it's impossible not to make judgments. It's impossible not to make, you know, think about things like that. But it is possible to be humble about it. It is possible to say, yeah, I bet they don't have the same benefits. I personally had one of the most amazing experiences growing up and most, you know, solid backgrounds. And I had all these blessings with school and all these different kinds of things. I worked hard, so I'm not going to, you know, deny that. But I was blessed so many ways that I have no right to look at anybody else and say, how can you be there? How can you do this? How can you get there? Because I was blessed beyond measure with the things that I've been given in my life and the things that God has given to me. And I think that's the way and attitude I think we all have to approach our world. And to say, yeah, we need to give them a little bit more grace, even more grace than we oftentimes give ourselves. And so in looking at all of these things, and again, I don't like these kind of negative sermons too often, but I also feel like it's a good starting spot to move forward from. If we look at this list, if we look at the seven things, and again, there's more than this that I could show you, but if we look at these signs and we say, yeah, that's something I always struggle with, or that's something that I continually have to deal with and consider and think about, then maybe we need to slow down and we say, okay, what would we do if we had symptoms? Okay, what would a wise person do if they had certain symptoms that, you know, a cough and a runny nose and these kind of things going on? Right, I say a wise person because I'm not one to go to the doctor either. But we'd go and we'd do something about it, right? You know, for a while we might cover up the symptoms, we might deal with them on a day-to-day, moment-by-moment basis. But we need to go back to where's this root at? And most of the time, it's that dynamic of how close and how much we're drawing to God. And so many of these symptoms draw directly from our dynamic and our relationship with God. But the biggest thing I think is important for us to move forward is that if we don't deal with them, we're going to keep going down a wrong path. And so the future, again, like I said, if it may start as a cough and a runny nose and a sore throat, but if we don't deal with it, if we don't take care of it, if we don't take medicine or whatever else to deal with it, it could turn into something much worse, right? And it can cause chronic issues and turmoil in our life. And so I don't want us to go home and say, man, I'm a terrible person. Don't ever do that, no matter what I say. If I ever make you feel that way, I'm doing something wrong. But don't go home and think, oh, I'm doing this wrong, and I'm doing this wrong. Look at all these signs that I have in my life. But say, okay, what am I going to do about those? What am I going to do about the things that I'm dealing with right now in order for me to move forward, to have a better relationship with God in the end, but also to be able to have a better relationship with those around us? Because I guarantee that if we deal with some of these signs, if I deal with some of these signs, the people around me will be blessed because of it. You know, the dynamic with my kids, the dynamic with, you know, the people I interact with, my family, my friends, is going to get better as I deal with these signs and these symptoms, especially when I deal with them in terms of my relationship with God. And so that's my challenge. That's my encouragement for you this morning. Again, I kind of want to end with a joke that I don't have for you because I feel like it's been such a downer of a morning. But pray about it. Think about it. Consider where you're at. I've been wrestling with this week as well and these things because I guarantee I have things that are chronic. Again, that being versus doing is really hard for me. You know, conflict's still really hard for me and all these, you know, I struggle with a lot of these different things. But I also have seen the benefit of working through some of them. I don't have nearly the anger I had when I was younger and in my, you know, in my college years because I've dealt with it in a lot of different ways. Part of me is if I still got angry about the same things now, I would probably kill myself because, but even when you deal with it, you can move forward better. And again, the dynamics in the relationship, not just with God, which is obviously so important, but the dynamic and relationships we have with each other will improve as well. Let's pray. Gracious Father, again, with all the negative and all the signs and symptoms we talked about this morning, help us to focus on you. Help us to focus on how can we not fix the symptoms directly necessarily, but how can we get closer to you? How can we work and draw near to you so that these symptoms become less of an obstacle and less of a struggle so that we can bless those around us well? I pray that you lead and guide and direct us this week. Help us to consider and to openly analyze and critique where we're at and what we're dealing with so that we can take steps to know and love you better, so that we can know and love those around us better as well. And I just pray this all in your Son Jesus' name. Amen. Worship team can come on up.